Simpsons Index, an online spreadsheet that is also a podcast. This is The Podcast.
Coming to you from SideQuest Studios, this is The Simpsons Index, episode 255. Hello out there, I'm your host, Elliot J. O'Neill, joined here as always, except when he's not, by B.T. Calloway.
Ahoy. Ahoy.
And returning champion, Paul Goodman.
I never really had decaf.
And thank you for joining us for The Simpsons Index. We review Simpsons, old and new, even by this standard where an old episode is from season 23 of the goddamn thing.
Yeah. Wow. If this is old, I don't want to see new.
No, you do not. Nah, the newer episodes have been better. Yeah. But, I mean, let's ask you if you know that. Paul, we like to ask our returning champions now, have you been keeping up with the show? Have you dipped your toes back in outside of index obligations?
Mm. Well, as anyone who professes to be a fan of The Simpsons, no. But, I mean, if you're saying they're better, I'm curious.
The best we can say is they're trying now.
Okay.
Yeah, like you see a lot of things circling around on social media. Oh, The Simpsons is back. The show's as good as ever. It isn't. The headline should be, The Simpsons are trying again.
Okay, well, I mean, that's nice.
It's something.
Because I think effort needs to be rewarded with at least respect.
Yeah.
But, God, what I wouldn't give to be sad watching The Simpsons. And if it doesn't leave me feeling like there's no hope for humanity, then...
Yeah.
Then what's the point?
Hey. Well, yeah. Maybe that's the secret.
Yeah.
Got my priorities all mixed up.
But again, like, we have found a few good new episodes, even something from the 30s that got a cubic zirconia from one of our panelists. Yeah. But
gosh,
that's for another podcast. And you find all that on the Simpsons Index spreadsheet, available at thesimpsonsindex.com.
Just driving traffic to the website. Ridiculous.
I do that. And one of the last times we had you on a podcast as well was for Thrones of Game. You have the honor of being one of two people who were ever guest stars on that podcast.
Yeah, I got really hard into Thrones of Game during lockdown, as also re-getting into Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And getting to season 4 and going, surely 5 through 8 aren't going to be as bad as we remember. Because the first 4 are so... Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that was definitely my biggest revelation in doing Thrones of Game backwards was, things make a bad turn at 5. Everyone's like, 7 and 8 are bullshit. It's like, no, things were going wrong way before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are the signs. I was caught up in 5 and 6, I think, going, it's still good. It's still good.
It's okay.
It's gone.
It's me during season 15 of The Simpsons. It's still
good. Yeah.
There's some bits.
Like I said, one of two guests, it was you and Christian Nan on Thrones of Game.
Hodor.
Oh, fuck yeah.
But yeah, thought I'd attribute that with this episode today, which opens up with a Game of Thrones couch gag.
Yeah. Right.
You did that on purpose, you sneaky bastard.
Oh, you sneaky boy.
Yeah, so before we get into the episode proper, what did we think of this couch gag?
I mean,
fine.
Yeah, in comedy terms, it was a non-entity, but I did appreciate the animation of the cogs and the clockwork of the houses all coming up from the ground. There was something sort of visually pleasing about that. It felt right in my brain, and Nell came in and went, oh god, what are they doing? And I went, no, hold on. And then another house appeared, and I went, you see? And she went, I don't think I want to be in this relationship anymore.
Dang.
Yeah,
every girlfriend I've had throughout this podcast.
It wasn't as overdone as it could have been, and it was fine. It was the bit, and you got the bit, and it didn't feel like it needed to tack on extra stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how computer animation works, if they just sort of copy pasted that effect or what, but it was still good. I still appreciated the craft of it.
Yeah, and it didn't get to the end and have Homer be like, but where'd all these cogs come from, or anything like that. That would have kind of ruined it. It was just, this is the Game of Thrones intro and we're done.
Yeah.
I just thought it was like, I don't know, I guess you could take it either way, but I thought it was just sort of weird how it was in two camps where like, the layout of Springfield was all very much as we know it, but then the characters were all dressed up Games of Thronesy. I would have liked it if they sort of committed one way or the other and just like had the cogs and had like the writings of the map. Like, it's a small detail, but like,
yeah, there was a weird bit where Bart's riding a skateboard with a super soaker and a sword, and I'm like, what mood are you in here? And he's dressed as a knight, and it's like,
what are you saying? with this, with all of this. Yeah, see, I didn't stop to think about the details. You got me there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were a few details that I quite enjoyed, like Abe being old Tree Man. What did we call him? Was that just Tree Man?
It's just the Tree Man. Yeah,
Tree
Max
von Sydow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it, when he showed up in Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Like, oh, maybe he does have some credibility after... Oh.
Like, later season Game of Thrones cameos are just odd.
I didn't mind the Tree Man arc.
Yeah, Tree Man was fine.
No, I enjoyed it. It was good. But yeah, some of the cameos, like getting Kevin Eldon in, or, you know, Richard E. Grant.
I don't know who that is.
Kevin Eldon was one of the... I think he was in... Richard E. Grant was one of the mummers, wasn't he? The actors. Yeah, because Kevin Eldon was in that... He's the guy in Hot Fuzz with the Spider-Man face paint going, right. Let me tell you about my perfect Friday.
Yeah.
That guy.
Right.
Yeah. Ian McShane.
Yeah. Yeah. He was in there.
Game of Thrones.
He was one episode. Yeah. Yeah, he was on that commune.
Yeah. Mm. The nice priest when the Hound comes back.
Right.
And because he's nice, he dies horribly.
Of course. Yeah.
And Ed Sheeran.
Yeah. Ed Sheeran one is the most egregious of like... slamming on the brakes and going, look, kids, look who we got.
It's Ed Sheeran.
It's not least like, he could have cut that scene and it wouldn't have mattered. It was just there to have Ed Sheeran in it.
If they would have ended that scene with him being butchered, then, and, you know, that's not animosity towards Ed Sheeran. I admire his ability to straddle all genres and appeal to as many people as possible, but... and that sounded like a diss, and I didn't necessarily mean it as one either.
No, I get what you mean. It was a pointless scene, and especially at this point, Arya's all like, kill all Lannisters. If it had been like, oh, these guys seem nice. Well, got to murder them anyway. It would have been, you know, something for her character. Anyway, we're talking about the wrong show.
I had a lot that I didn't say.
Listen to Thrones of Game. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Look, this is just going to be reflective of my notes. I think I got more to say about Game of Thrones intro right now than the rest of the episode. But
that's about right.
Yeah, so let's hook into the episode then. This was Season 23, Episode 15, Exit Through the Quickie Mart. First released in March of 2012, it was directed by Stephen Dean Moore, written by Mark Wilmore. In this episode, it's Marge's birthday, but don't worry, that doesn't play into much of the episode.
Not at all.
Much like the title.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Yeah, well, it turns into Bart's rebelling against Homer, and he's become a graffiti artist. Then he captures the attention of various graffiti artists that aren't Banksy, and then he holds a gallery thing, and then that turns out it's a police sting, and the episode ends with him disappearing out of a rat cage. Hey, what do we think?
Hey, oh, the writers are dads who can't accept change.
You don't say.
Yeah, God, it was like, this is the thing, right? I wasn't angry in the way that I've been in recent appearances on this lovely podcast. Mm. I didn't watch this and get pissed off at the, you know, the inanity and consistency of the gags that never work for me.
Mm.
This was very much a non-entity. It slipped by relatively harmlessly.
It's an episode.
Yeah. And it kind of got my back up that at the end, they just felt that it was sufficient to spend about 7 minutes going, by the way, what we're saying is street art used to be graffiti and we can't get over that.
And now it's in galleries.
Yeah.
What?
culture truly has died.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I can only agree. But yeah, it just... The I mean, I'll let you talk because I could just go on forever. And I'm
sure. Exasperated sigh kind of sums it up.
Yeah, yeah, again,
you probably get a lot of those. You could do a montage
remix. Yeah. Look, yeah, it's fine. I didn't really have strong feelings one way or another. There were a couple of jokes I liked, the few that were just like, and then it was over. And I have notes on plot structure.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it was just fairly toothless and like. Yeah. Again, to back up your points, there's just nothing that made me particularly angry or anything like that. Maybe I'm a little desensitized modern Simpsons, and but like this was just like a street art is a thing. Who can we get to cameo in this episode?
Yeah, we've already done Banksy, so
Well, and coincidentally enough, Banksy did the couch gag for the episode Money Bart that we reviewed.
Yeah, that was an annoying episode.
Yeah, it all ties together. We're through the looking glass, people.
Yeah, for famous graffiti artist Paul Goodman.
Hello, my work has been my work has been restricted to my own walls and nail quickly paints over it. But I'm looking to make a break out there in the
That's still the authority keeping you down, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always a man. Man always be manning. But yeah, it's just like I had this, it felt like the old pisshead in the pub who has spent his better years getting in fights over the footy and intimidating people as like the top dog in this pub. Yeah. And now he's just an old toothless drunk who still yells things, but they don't really make any sense.
But it's also not football season, so he has nothing to yell about.
Yeah.
It's just like, someone debate me.
Yeah. No one even feels the need to step in and defend you because it's completely, completely harmless. Mm. And it's better just to let him shout his thing and then he'll have a sleep in the corner until he finds another £2 for the cheapest pint available. It was nothing. The subplot was
Subplot was terrible, and that's going to be my biggest fix.
You're talking about the poo going out of business and being jealous of this Hawaiian-themed supermarket? Yeah. Was this a thing? Like, I know we get sort of lost on a couple of like American-specific culture things, but like... Yeah. Hawaiian-based supermarkets?
Yeah, I was thinking, there's going to be there is going to be at least one scene where Apu is involved in this subplot in some way. Yeah. But you have the scene in the supermarket to begin with where they have that mini sword fight.
Yep.
And that's one of those things where I just wrote down, is a tiny sword fight what I love about The Simpsons? Is that ever been something that I've enjoyed in The Simpsons? Did it ever feature in seasons 1 to 8? Did it even feature in seasons 9 to 12? Look, you know,
I'll only give it some points because I like the sound effects of the plastic swords clicking together. It was very non-dramatic, and I think that worked. It was just
I was also a very big fan of one of the swords getting knocked out of the hand and sort of swerving to the background and twanging into one of the shelves. That was quite sensorially pleasing. But
I do also think that I think Homer gets disarmed twice, and it's like, guys, how many things do you want? Because one where he gets knocked out of his hand and one where it breaks, and it's like, you don't have to make it this long.
This is not the first time I've been on here saying, you know, this is a Family Guy sketch.
Yeah, true.
Not a Simpson sketch. But then the subplot ends because as he's shutting up shop with the one good sight gag in the episode.
Confession, I never had decaf. I got that. That got me as well.
That was very good. But as he's doing that, what's his wife's name?
Manjula.
Yeah, she just shows up and then says, oh, don't worry, the subplot's finished. And that's it.
But it's a classic, three scene subplot. But the first one is, Apu's at this supermarket spying on the other customers who are going there instead of to the Quickie Mart.
Yeah.
Then it's him robbing the new store. And it's like, how do we get from why is everyone shopping here? You should be shopping with me to robbery. Like there's nothing in between. And it felt like so left field. Because at this point, we don't know the Quickie Mart's even struggling.
No.
And so for him to be like, no, I'm going to rob this place now, it's like, the hell? And then the next scene is the Quickie Mart shutting down, but it gets resolved because the other place was serving monkey meat. And it's like...
Yeah, okay, cool.
And of course, it ties into nothing of the main plot. Like, I just thinking about how to fix this one, skipping way ahead, because fuck you, Elliot.
Is fuck you, Elliot, a new segment in the show?
Come on, man. I've got a structure that I want to stick to. We'll get there.
I'll chamber it and unfuck Elliot.
Okay.
But no, I agree. It was just so, I don't know. I guess they were serving monkey the whole time instead of chicken.
Let's just say Mo.
For real.
Yeah, but at least in Let's Just Say Mo, it was at an era where we've theorized before that season, was that 11 or 12 where they have the...
Nine.
I can't remember. Nine. Oh, yeah, even nine. They were like, okay, the show's probably going to wrap up soon. We can do... You get like one bullshit ending and that's enough.
Yeah.
You can't pull up multiple times.
Tommy's firmly in cheek there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you don't actually... Do you really care how they got off the island? No, let's just have fun with this.
Yeah, but there's no knowing wink here. It's just they're relying on the joke of monkey being substituted for chicken to be funny in itself and like saying, it was monkey pot pie. No, the drumsticks were just shortened monkey tails. Monkey, monkey, monkey.
And it's not funny anymore because, ever since that happened in the UK, but, with horse meat.
Yeah.
Oh,
you didn't hear about this, bro.
5 to 10 years ago, there was a whole scandal about, I don't know if it was a supermarket or a particular, like a huge manufacturer and distributor or supplier, was using horse meat in a lot of ready meals. So it was like, well, what about lasagna? Yeah, it was horse meat lasagna. What about this?
Oh, it was horse meat.
Yeah.
And everybody, like that, which is kind of crazy, but also the crazy thing of people going, "Oh, that's disgusting. I wouldn't eat horse meat. I'd rather take a baby cow, shoot it in the back of the head and then slit its throat
and parents,
you know, so on and so forth. I'm aware of the cognitive dissonance in which I live my meat eating life.
Yes.
But the furore over that was ridiculous because you're eating a fucking ready meal. What did you expect? Even if it's a cow, you're going to be eating its butt whole.
Yeah, you can be outraged that it's not what it said on the label. Yeah. You can't be outraged about the concept of eating horse. It's like, you know what? It's still meat and you didn't really care.
Yeah. But we're in this post-truth world where like crazy shit like that does happen. So it's not actually that funny just to say, "Huh, imagine monkey meat." Because people go, well, they probably can buy that from, you know, Aldi.
New monkey in a can from Aldi.
Yeah. Ooh, it's cheap.
Check the middle aisle today.
All
right. Well, yeah, I mean, that about sums up the B plot. We're getting through this episode mighty quickly.
Yeah,
but yeah, focusing on the A and turning to B, T. For better or worse, what stands
smooth
out to you?
Smooth as butter. Oh, my God. my big note was really it takes 14 minutes to introduce the guest star and kind of the main point of this episode. It's like, and that's when, you know, Bart's street art is kind of taken off and he becomes like a street artist, not just a graffiti artist. And that it's too late to do anything with it other than just be like, and here's the gallery and that was a setup and the end. And it's just, get that way, way earlier. Like getting here takes so long. The whole thing starts with Marge's birthday. But first of all, quick moment of heart because it's part of it. I'm sorry. I'm not fucking up your schedule here. But quick moment of heart is, you know, Bart gets Marge for her birthday an exact duplicate of her childhood rabbit. And he's like, "Oh, I saw this picture in Grandma's and I searched around and around until I found one that was exactly the same." So that's surprisingly sweet.
Yeah.
Then the rabbit chews through the phone cord. So then I get the call from What's Her Face and blah, blah, blah. And then
Homer for once was prepared for Marge's birthday and got this food processor that had some TV whatever. They like not a real person, they're just
even
their parody.
Trying to quickly summarize this many steps.
And then Homer goes to the fancy new Hawaiian supermarket to get it signed and then gets a promise from that person that she'll call Marge the next day, setting up the chewing through the phone cord. Passing the ball back to you, BT.
All to say that Homer's mad at Bart, good lord. And so puts him in the rabbit hutch, and then Bart gets mad about that, so he starts his graffiti. Point is made in the sense that it takes so long to get there that by the time we do, we're done. It's over.
Yeah, Simpsons were the king or queen, the monarch of the idea of... like setting up the plot with two feints. Something would happen and something else would happen. And then, you know, they would build and set up the context for what is really happening. Whereas this is gag. I need 58 gags on my desk by Monday. Oh, shit.
God damn it. Get it.
These plots sometimes have plots.
Yeah. Or sometimes the exact opposite. One of my all-time favorites is Homer at Bat because it is so fast to getting to the point. It's literally the plant. Homer eats a donut, starts choking. All the plant employees are not looking at the Heimlich maneuver and instead looking at the softball sign-up sheet. And then we're in. It takes a minute and a half at most.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like, you got the problem with this one as well that, you've mentioned Bart did a very sweet thing. Homer did a very sweet thing.
Yeah.
But it was just all just, it's a whatever. We just need Homer to be mad at Bart so then Bart
and
rebels.
There are thousand reasons to do that.
There is no consideration for what you set up in the start of the episode that traditionally you'd expect the characters of Bart and Homer to be forgetful of Marge's birthday and... Like, for once, they're both prepared, and, like, it's just... That's not playing into this dynamic at all. Mm-hmm. It's just...
Yeah.
It's just a, whatever, we need them to be at odds with each other. And then it's just, like, Marge is dropped in this whole thing, and it's like, that's really disappointing.
Yeah, it takes the entire first ad break to get there, and it just needs to be... Homer's mad at Bart. Bart wants revenge. And then there should be a scene about him being like, "I'm going to punk Homer." And Milhouse being like, "Punking's kind of done. Why don't you satirize him?"
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's the new thing or something. And then that's we can get into this in about 2 minutes if we try.
Yeah.
It's just like I had the sense. I had like trepidation once he'd sort of gotten in with all of these... famous, I guess, street artists. I wouldn't know. It's just graffiti to me. But they, and I thought, oh, God, this is, I don't know if I can be bothered to, you know, follow this plot along as they go through all the twists until, oh, we're 16 minutes in.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I think I just like older Simpsons episodes even feel longer because of the time it takes to, you know, just stop and have you be with characters and think about things.
Yeah.
In a way, I kind of sympathize because I was gonna complain about the, you know, the flanderization of, you know, a whole bunch of characters in The Simpsons and why the subplot was absolutely nothing and so on. But then the same goes for the opposite. If you're gonna have Homer and Bart play completely against character, it seems like a waste, really wasteful to just throw that away as a plot, like trigger, an inciting incident.
No, 100% right. Because, yeah, it's, you're right. They're acting out of character to start with, which you'd think would set up like a more unusual plot. But it's like, no, it was just to get to a very conventional place for The Simpsons. And it's like, well, that's weird. Why would you use like them like being prepared for once to just lead to them just being at odds as always?
Yeah, in a microcosm, that's just the Armand Tanzarian plot, but in about 2 minutes. And then it ends with, it's sort of rewarded with meanness from the chef. And that in itself just feels really sort of icky. The whole, and it just set me up for the rest of the episode in a really bad way. It just made me think, oh, well, only bad things are going to happen in this episode and people are going to be awful.
Yeah.
Great. Can't wait to watch
this. This was 2012. People still had optimism.
Yeah, 2012, the year where everybody felt the world was going to be okay.
Hey, it didn't end and everyone was like, fuck yeah, cool.
John Cusack was wrong.
Take that, Roland Emmerich.
Have you guys reviewed that movie for OGT? Like, I've never watched it, but everything I hear about it sounds fascinatingly terrible.
It is fascinatingly terrible.
I don't think we have. And if we have... It's been done when Salt was when Salt has had a guest on. I definitely haven't. But I know he hates Roland Emmerich so much that I think he'd prefer to not watch any more Roland Emmerich movies.
Even Salt has his limits. You said you've seen it, BT?
Yeah, I got curious one day. I was like, well, what was this whole deal?
No, we all get curious.
Yeah, because seeing as we never got our Y2K movie.
I want to see that disaster flick, yeah.
Yeah.
How that would be amazing if that was made in 1999. What a cultural relic that would be.
Oh, yeah.
How delightfully twee
I know.
that movie would be.
And we didn't get it, and I want it.
But yeah, just quickly mentioning before, and yeah, like as we said, it gets the 16-minute mark and then introduces a bunch of guest stars, and mentioning before Homer at the bat and like how eloquent that was in like handling like so many guest stars.
Yeah.
This one is just very like gag, 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 gag. Okay, they don't matter to the plot anymore. So yeah, we get playing themselves, Shepard Fairey, Ron English, Kenny Scharf, and Robbie Konell.
Okay.
The big four.
The who's who of street art.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. You know, I guess that's on me for not knowing. Yeah. Maybe the Simpsons are huge fans.
I guess I don't look at enough walls outside. Like,
yeah.
I guess so, yeah. I'm too busy looking into the faces of enemies.
I'm a big floor guy. Yeah, I'm always down on the floor looking at it. That's where my eyes stay.
Where's floor art?
Yeah, I prefer floor art, thank you.
Okay, new movement. Boom.
All of the celebrity, like the guest stars. Guest stars, you know... Like when you get to sort of seasons 9 onwards, The Simpsons guest appearance is usually just, hello, this is me speaking in the most generic voice possible.
Yeah.
So you don't even know for sure if this is me. And that was kind of what this is. And I didn't know the people, which isn't their fault.
But. There'd be an interesting chart of how many guest stars voiced a character. And then over the years, how many guest stars voiced themselves. Because there's definitely a shift where they are almost always themselves now.
Yeah. It's like they've got the template ready to go of the sort of the semi-slouch, the hand up in greeting and the nice face. Yeah. So they can introduce themselves and then leave again.
Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't even like a, what are you doing in Springfield? It's just like, gag, 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 gag. And it's like, oh, I guess I have to know this person to understand why that's funny. Like,
Which, you know, sometimes that's on me, but it also feels like, you know, it doesn't help me with investment in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sure if I understood this, I'd be getting it, but I don't. So please continue the episode, I suppose.
Well, especially that it all boiled down to being like, you could have gotten rid of everybody except Shepard Fairey. And for those that don't know, Shepard Fairey was the one who did the Andre the Giant Obey graffiti tag.
From Andre Has a Posse.
Yeah. And they mentioned in the episode the Obama Hope one as well. Mm-hmm. So Bart's sort of doing a parody of that where he's doing a face of Homer and riding dope. And then, so, I mean, I don't mind the plot twist that Shepard Fairey was part of the sting in the end. But, like, again, like the other three were just so superfluous and just didn't matter.
Yeah, it's as you say, if it was... I didn't even think about that. I think I was just too numbed. But if it would have just been Shepard Fairey, you could have had like every other line that those three characters had could have been his.
Yeah.
And there's only so many gagging you can do before a bit of characterization slips through, no matter how accidentally. And it just, just would have been focused. But I mean, I guess they're still in gag country.
Yeah. And I mean, it's probably not fair to compare it, but bringing it back to Homer at bat again, which is getting a lot of mileage this episode.
I'll keep comparing it.
It's a great episode. Go watch it.
I still don't know who any of those guys are, but I know their characters from the show. Like, I get their deal.
Yeah, exactly.
That's actually a fascinating history. Go check out my appearance on Pods in the Key of Springfield, where Nick Ibis updates us on all of the people in that episode and the various wild careers that they had.
Ooh, I will.
And until then, Paul, passing it to you. For better or worse, is there a moment that stands out to you from this episode?
Just check my notes. Cause other than the decaf.
Still like that joke, that good joke.
I like that good joke.
Yeah, it was once again, the sign writing jokes in The Simpsons remain strong. There's one early early on when they're going to the supermarket, and it's like, six aisles of olives. And I'm like, okay, that's
good. I missed that one. That's good.
Fine. I did like the line, we've got an audience full of churchgoers and Marines.
Yeah.
That felt like, it was very on the nose, but it felt like the kind of anti-establishment Simpsons that I like and still expect.
Like, of course, this wholesome show has like that as their audience, a live audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not picking fun at those people specifically, it's picking fun at the established like institutions that, you know, make content for people. And that was, it was nice. It was throwaway. I didn't draw too much attention to it. It's felt seamless.
But yeah, it does sort of feel weird when you mention that, like the whole anti-establishment nature of The Simpsons in the early days, and now, like, especially at this time in their 20s, they're firmly the establishment.
Yeah.
And then commenting on graffiti street art and then making Shepard Fairey a cop. Like, it's very
weird. Now, was the Banksy episode before this? Not the Banksy episode, the Couch Banksy intro.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. It just adds to the hypocrisy of it all, doesn't it? I mean, we spoke about that intro and how Banksy is criticizing their outsourcing and exploitative practices, but then they just carry on with the episode and they're like, ha ha, good one, independent artist. Yeah.
Yep.
Now on with the comedy, the state-sanctioned comedy. But, you know, if they were able to overlook that criticism in the same episode, it would have really been, you know, clearly... utterly meaningless by the time this episode came out.
I mean, apparently Shepard Fairey was really honored to be a part of this episode and the plot. Apparently some of his early drawings were of Simpsons, so this meant a lot to him. So
that's cool.
Good on him.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's cool.
Wackiness. Was this a particularly wacky episode of The Simpsons?
I've only got two, and that sound effect comes into it. Where Homer puts Bart in the cage and then pushes his flab back through, and it makes like balloon sounds. I was like,
I did like that. That was my second good thing of this episode.
Yeah, that reminded me of those I don't know what you'd call them. They're like those bubble popping toys that sort of seem to be semi the rage at the moment.
Yeah, the I don't know what you call them either. But they're kind of like the sensory toys that they're just like little silicon lumps, and you kind of pop them through.
Yeah, you pop them in and you pop them back, and they sort of seem to be in every one of those like pop up novelty gadget stores. Like,
Well, it's a mix between genuinely good for people who have sensory overload to have something physical to fiddle with, also much like fidget cubes and spinners, just a fad thing for a lot of people. But so there's like legitimate people who genuinely do find these things helpful. And then the 90% of the rest of the population.
Yeah, I actually saw a fidget spinner that had those bubble things, and I'm like, just wow, this is a peak fad combining right here.
Yeah, yeah. And then put that with a yo-yo and a Furby and a Tamagotchi, and we'll be set. If you don't know those things, kids, ask your parents.
Then you're lucky. I did think to begin with that you were talking about, you know, those little, like, I guess they're silicone also. It's like a disc. And you push like you sort of push it up in the middle into a dome, and then eventually it snaps back into place and flies into the air. And I was game to know that they were back. But I just imagine like setting one of those off in the cinema when you're trying to watch Love Lies Bleeding.
What I had was like a hard rubber because it would spring properly. And if it hit you in the face, that thing hurt.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, we got the Royal Easter Show going on in Sydney at the moment. Oh, yeah. And yeah, that kind of thing is like prime show bag ingredient. What am I thinking? Content. Yeah. But yeah, like there isn't a lot of wackiness to talk about this one. I guess, you know, in terms of animation and stuff, you know, commenting on butts, like actual graffiti itself, we haven't really talked about that. Mm-hmm. Were there any like standout butt graffiti tags from that?
Actually, sorry, wackiness. Homer has a sandwich in a sandwich bag upon waking. And that, I think that's approaching wackiness.
That's just practical.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
This is where I've been going wrong all my life.
Sandwich bag. My other bit of whack was at the end when they bust Bart. Wiggum is like a fawn statue, and Eddie and Lou are like a centaur. And it's like, these things would have stood out so much because nothing else looks like that.
Yeah, I'm sure Bart didn't like have them in his gallery and design them or whatever. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't mind Eddie busting out of the butt of the centaur, though, to arrest Bart.
And that it was also a delayed gag, because first you just get Eddie showing up, Lou, and you're like, okay. And then later on there's Eddie as, you know, the butt of the horse. I'm like, okay,
yeah,
that's funny.
But yeah, how about Bart's art? Did we have any standout moments from that?
I liked, there's one of like the stencil art of Homer on like a bench asleep on it, and the kind of his arm goes out across the seat of the bench. I'm like, okay, that's clever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I found the original, the OG dope, fairly pleasing.
Yeah.
I'd wear that.
The shading on that was pretty neat.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Kid's good with a spray can.
What can I say? What can I tell you, mate?
No, there was one montage where I had a good run of them. Like, I liked the on the side of the school, Principal Skinner, I am a wiener, and he was actually a hot dog. I was like, all right, that's a decent callback. Kind of drove past it, didn't linger. And then, Homer's Drunken Donuts one. I was like, okay.
I did also... kind of like when Lisa knows about it, she's like, I won't tell anyone if you throw in the occasional meat is murder. And they're like, and they kind of just half-ass every now and then, just meat is murder? Question mark.
Just,
there's something kind of funny about them almost doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, a good wacky moment I enjoyed was when Bart and Milhouse are running from they don't know who turns out to be the graffiti artist. But Milhouse is like, I need my inhaler. And then huffs some blue spray paint. Yeah. And then Bart's like, quick, drink this paint thinger. And then,
That was one of those things. I didn't like the inhaling the spray can because that's not going to feel anything like your inhaler. But the solution of quick, drink this paint thinner.
But how about the heart of this episode? Did we feel any of the emotions? Did we feel the bumps?
No. Look, early on with Marge's birthday, I'm going to say yes. Because Bart. Yeah, that's the thing. Bart has a genuine, genuinely well thought out present, and Homer's excitement about this lady calling Marge is genuine. He's like, "Ooh, in a few minutes there's going to be a phone call." It's like it's nice to see him excited about her happiness.
Yeah,
which is very rare in the show.
Marge deserves happiness. That's the Marge. She deserves it so bad.
But for a Marge birthday episode, that it gets dropped so much, and its only reminder is that later on in the episode, Homer's walking the dog and the bunny, and it's this was Marge's birthday.
I do at least appreciate the memory that they have Homer walking the bunny, because, I was like, that was a thing. And the other bit of heart I had is Homer does have a good line of, when a man isn't a hero to his son, he's nothing. And, that's pretty good. And then even Bart's follow-up line of, parents had feelings, who knew?
Yeah.
I thought that was a good line, but I just felt like Homer wouldn't have had that realization.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been that articulate.
He
or
needs
profound.
A street artist to explain it to him.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess that point is fairly labored as well, is that Homer realizing that he's the what people have dubbed Mr. Fatso on all of Bart's graffitis about town, and like even like by the point that he realizes he's wearing the shirt, and it's just it's really dragged out and just pretty ineloquently. Like, it's not bad, it's just like
it's not to a point, it just delays the plot, really. Like, I do like when he's first sitting there looking at the news report and it's like, haha, that's funny, and then he's like, I wonder who that guy is, and then Marge walks in and goes, Homer, have you seen our stencil budget for this month? I was like, okay, I enjoyed. if it was to a point or something, but it's just again delaying the eventual plot we know he's going to find out.
Yeah, and if it really made me care about the repercussions of Homer finding out and caring about how that would have affected him emotionally, then that line would have landed a lot better.
Yeah.
But it was joke.
Yeah. But instead, profundity. He finds out on a joke. Walk while he's walking the dog and the rabbit with Bart, and then the comeuppance is he strangles Bart in his sleep that night. That's there's so much gap between these two things.
Yeah.
And my only other moment of heart was when Marge is really happy about the rabbit. It's like, oh, no pet has ever been able to match the love I had for this rabbit when I was a child. And then you see Snowball in the background just look down and just sad and just walks away. I was like, yeah, that's some good cat acting.
Yeah, that good acting cat. That caused me and Nell to look at each other and do that couple sort of, oh, sad animal. face. So yeah, kudos for that.
But ultimately, did it feel like an episode of The Simpsons? Are these the characters we know and love? Is this a show we know and love?
I mean, from this era, we've talked a lot about sometimes Simpsons writing feels like, here's a popular thing, we don't understand it, but we're gonna make an episode about it.
Crazy.
Which is, this one's doesn't dive too deep into the concept, but it's still not really saying anything about it. Like, there's a little bit of, you know, what was once a sign of a bad neighborhood is now the sign of a creative one or something like that.
Yeah.
But again, none of that really matters or means anything.
Yeah. Also, it's just incorrect because there's an obvious difference between street art and somebody tagging somebody just like scrawling across a shop window.
Yeah. Or the difference between satire and spraying the word cunt.
Yeah, exactly. fantastic. I forgot whether this was a swearing podcast or not.
Oh, yeah.
Cunt.
I like it. I like it's been like fairly clean up until now. And then every pearl has now been clutched. Every monocle is now dropped.
You lured them in like The Simpsons used to do.
Yeah. We've opened the fuck gate now.
Hey. The flood prick.
Yeah. Look, I think characters, for the most part, fine. It's just the show that doesn't feel like itself, but like individual character integrity, I think, is fine for the most part. It's just, it's Apu that's really bugging me in this one. How,
yeah, for real.
Like hysterical he's getting and whatever, like, and to drive this nothing plot.
It's really annoying. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's completely against his type. Or rather, he could get to that point if we spent any time with it, but the point of him robbing the store, we have no idea the Quickie Mart is struggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, do you remember who needs the Quickie Mart?
Yeah.
I do. Oh,
don't forget it. It's just going to hold you back at this stage. But the sad thing is that the laziness with which they went about making the point about street art, they still say about as much as they did when they were making their point about phones or about crystal healing or something.
Sure.
So it's like, God, they don't even need to put in the effort, really. So no wonder they stopped trying on that aspect because it never bore fruit. But yeah, in terms of The Simpsons that I know, sadly, this is The Simpsons that I know now. But
this is what we're going to have now.
Yeah. Look, I was going to say, similar to like how I feel about this era is really a joke that I think worked at first and then immediately bombed because they took too many bites, which was when Mo walks into this new supermarket. And he's like, oh, wow, white wine? I didn't know that was a thing. But I got a chuckle out of that. But then he's like, Swiss cheese, peanut butter. And I'm like, come on, this was actually funny. Why did you keep talking?
Yeah, and it stops just before it becomes anti-comedy, doesn't it? I don't know what the justification is for that length of a joke then, because you've got the gag.
Yeah, it's like, I got it. You can stop.
You're
not adding anything.
It was one thing as well where, like, it's a very minor complaint, but, like, the delivery of it was like, oh, I think you could have landed that, but, like, he wasn't really emphasizing the right words, in my opinion. Like, it was like, it started white wine. Like, you're sort of putting a question mark on the first word to, like, oh, it's this sort of subcategory of
thing. The thing about it that's
odd. And, like, it just got less and less. Or he's like, Swiss cheese? It sounded like he was just excited by the premise of those alone, where it's like,
not the Swiss part.
Butter with peanut? Yeah. What? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Again, very minor, like, nerdy little... but I mean, what else are we doing here? You know.
Well, yeah, exactly. I could nitpick in the exact opposite direction. Like, I appreciated the white, like it hadn't ever entered his head before that. But I feel like Mo would probably be more the person that would have never heard of wine.
Gin and tonic. Do they mix?
Or, but then you could have found two other, because it's not a bad escalation for those three things, but you could have chosen better. But also there's like, I feel, is there one or two more after peanut butter?
Yeah, there are a bunch, and I just couldn't be bothered going back and writing them down.
Yeah, but I think you're right, Paul. It needed to go longer, so it did get into that Andy Kaufman stage. Yeah.
I'll just have him wandering through the background, constantly, paper towels.
Yeah, and then it has to get ridiculous and not be things that would, and it has to cease being things that work. White wine, hat, Swiss cheese, sure, peanut butter, but then,
garbage bags?
Garbage bags and so on, or you need a tight three, two other things that are that good. I'm not a writer's team.
No, we're not in the writer's room. We're riffing and complaining.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I should rename this podcast.
Riffing and complaining.
But yes, no, would you watch this one again?
No.
If it's on, I might fold my laundry to it, maybe, at best.
Yeah.
I tell you, instead of doing that, I've whenever a Simpsons episode comes on that I've seen and don't like, and I'm doing house chores, there's what I like to do. I've got a podcast called A Man Screaming Constantly, and I just put that on instead on my headphones. It's really well mixed.
Yeah.
It's a seamless, like, half-hour scream, and it loops perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
I can't recommend that enough.
No, I'm signed to their Patreon as well. Get a bonus stream every week. Oh, it's great.
Slightly different pitch. Yeah.
I like the idea. It's the pub patron from that we were talking about at the beginning, who's like, yeah, you know about all this stuff now, the things I don't even understand. You got a lot of the flight. Oh. Nah, it's not the way it used to be. Fight me.
Yeah. Look at you. What was this with your hair and your face and you got a collar? You're still a city
women
boy.
With short hair.
Yeah.
But thanks for listening. Like and subscribe.
Yeah.
Smash that like button.
I wouldn't watch this unless I were invited on the show to watch this episode again.
Yeah.
And I fear that I've set that up.
Index Redux.
I feel like the experience of actually watching it wasn't too bad. It's just, going back and picking apart it sort of, its faults really do seem to shine.
Yeah.
But I think, if you were just to watch it and not think about it again, I don't think I'd regret that
experience. You can never go back. I'm going to think about it next time I watch it.
But BT.
Yeah.
Now, what would you like to change?
Right. First of all, tighten up that beginning. We talked about that. But also, just find a way to bring Apu into this if you want this to be a B plot. Maybe it's Bart has graffitied his new, dope symbol on this new store. And so people are coming to see it. And therefore, they're shopping at this new place. And Apu's like, hey, you used to graffiti my walls. What's wrong with my walls? Something. Because it's just. Having it even called Exit Through the Quickie Mart, obviously a reference to Exit Through the Gift Shop, the Banksy documentary thing, but it's pointless. Like, you could cut Apu entirely from this episode and it would not make any difference. If anything, you should, because that would free up some time for some other stuff.
Yeah. Mm.
But so if you want to have him in there, find a way to tie it in. And seeing as, Bart sprayed El Barto on his walls so many times, there should be some connection there. Like, back when he was just a petty vandal, it was the Quickie Mart. But now that he's a street artiste, it's got to be this fancy new store or something where people are seeing. I don't know. There's something there if you want it.
How about you, Paul?
Either completely overhaul the episode and make the sweet presence the finale of the episode and it be a Marge birthday episode through and through, or stick with Marge's dismay and heartbreak at being shunned by this awful cook.
Yeah.
And then...
Because we spent so long setting that up for it not to matter.
Yeah. And a heartbreak is hard to see because, Marge is long-suffering and, just clearly gets neglected still. Mm. Probably maybe to give Julie Kavner a break, but stick with that. And then in Bart's exhibition at the very end, it could be a series of things unveiled to be for Marge. And then, Bart could still get arrested because street art is just graffiti. But, then he's continued to think about Marge and then there's an emotional thoroughfare for the episode.
Mm. Yeah, he's got like, art reflecting her somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, that's really nice because that's what I was trying to think about in what I change is just like, how do you keep the marginess of it all? Mm. Because, I feel like that's the one big shame of this episode is that it, for me, set up something really interesting and in that Bart and Homer were trying and Bart's gift ruined Homer's gift and that yeah, being the cause of a rift, but like it loses sight of the Mudge, and that's the big problem with this one.
You've just inspired me, Elliot. They could like Homer and Bart could have sort of worked together on the art. Or like once Homer finds out that art's about him. Mm. Him and Bart hash it out and then decide, and then they realize Marge is still struggling. So they make Bart's art about her.
They make a stencil art about Marge, but it says like home instead of hope or something.
Aww. You know. See? Sorry, you can continue, but you really brightened up my day there, Elliot.
See, and this is like kind of the kind of Simpsons that we like that pulls on the emotional heartstrings and has some jokes along the way. It's like, it's fun, but we also get to learn something today.
Yeah, and you can do both of those things, guys.
You can have it all. And
yeah, you can.
And yeah, drop the Apu thing. It's like, it's so little of it to be of any substance. Like, yeah. All right, we are here. It's time for our final notes.
You know, it should have been titled like Exit Through the Grift Shop or something.
That's pretty good.
Because then you can drop up here. Anyway, and I'm here to remind you of the notes I wrote when we watched this show. Yeah, we're doing Alanis Morissette again.
You ought a note.
Ought a note.
Nice.
Paul, have you got any final notes before we move on to the rankings?
The first note that I made was, oh, look at this clean, crisp look. where's my VHS
where's
Simpsons that I know and love? I'm never going to let go of that. I guess I am an old man now.
Well, you shouldn't.
Yeah, because, you know, the old men who let go of those kinds of petty things, they die.
Yeah.
And I'm not ready for that.
We will be the old men in the pub going, oh, there's these Simpsons. Where's the VHS scramble line?
Yeah, but we know and respect anti-comedy, so suck it up, kids. Oh, I kind of liked Open It Before It Suffocates. Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you mention that already?
No, that's good. Here's my present. Open it before it's off.
And the good comedic timing when Lisa asked Bart to just slip in a few meaty murders, and he goes, well, how is fur murder? They're just animals, without missing a beat. Dad!
Yeah.
It was nice.
Fine, yeah.
Yeah.
BT?
There's a bit in the beginning where Homer unveils, you know, the food processor thing he's got for Marge. He's like, and I'm going to get it autographed. And he's like, by who? Lenny? It's kind of the idea who do you know? You don't know anybody.
Yeah.
So I got a chuckle out of that.
Her escalating reaction to that thing was weird, though. I don't, like, think it wasn't funny, but, like, it's just how the over-exaggeration. And then Homer's like, I know.
There's a bit where Apu, when he's at first in that new supermarket, which does it even have a name? I don't even know. He's all like, you know, I'd never betray my friends. And Homer's like, friends are the only people you can betray. It's like, oh, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
You can only betray people who trust you. Let's see. There's a bit where he's, you know, about, he's angry at Bart and he's about to strangle him. He's like, I can't strangle a boy on his mother's birthday. Juries hate that kind of thing.
Yeah.
A bit I was very mixed on is when they're putting the posters up on a billboard. And Gredrick Tatum's there was like, hey, you have to get scared waking up my pigeons. If they do, they'll poop. And there are no newspapers anymore. I got to use Kindles. It's eating all my profits. It's almost
it's hat on a hat.
Yeah, like, but there is something kind of funny about there being no newspapers. I don't know. A bit where Wiggum, the Wiggum Lou corner I actually liked was, you know, they're like being interviewed on TV. He's like, I got a message for Prank Lloyd Wright. So, hey, that's an architect. He's like, they're all artists, Lou. Broaden your horizons. Let's see. There's a bit, even though I didn't like the moment where graffiti artist I don't know the name of, like, spray painted Milhouse onto his work, I did like Milhouse's response of, no, I've been satirized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. And my final note, I think, is going to be the only thing here that's real is the no refund sign. I mean, that hits home. Damn. Yeah. No refunds.
And I only had a couple of notes. During the Homer Apu sword mini sword fight thing, I did like Homer's little cheese shield thing. That was a decent play on the whole sword trope.
There was something kind of, to me at least, disappointing where, you know, he puts the cheese on Apu's sword and Apu pulls the cheese off with his teeth but then spits it. It's like, no, eat it. That would be more like menacing. I don't know.
Yeah,
that was my feeling. Yeah. It's like, oh, you think this is going to save you? I eat this shit, man.
I eat cheese for breakfast.
Also, you don't want to throw away cubed food. There's nothing that looks better in animation than cubed food. We watched Ratatouille last week for the first time. And man, the cubes in that. The cubes
good,
on that
good
film.
Cubes.
Man, yeah, amazing. I still want like to try that like particular style of ratatouille that they do at the end with the nice folding
Same.
Of the circled vegetables and stuff. Looks great.
Looks complicated. The one that reminds you of childhood.
Yeah. That made me cry a bit.
It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
It's really good. Also, I've been working on this list and I've got white wine, red wine, and I'm trying to think of a third one now, but I feel like red wine is a good escalation
wine.
From
that. Yeah. Rose?
Wine, yeah.
I didn't mind Homer's line, this will be a Marge's birthday when I get sex. Interesting.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I enjoyed the semantics of that. That was fun.
Yep. I think that's all my notes. Oh, there's a weird thing when Bart's trying to find Homer and then he has this riff about Hulk riding a rhino when the anyway.
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, yeah. Yeah, or the line of is the Hulk smiling. Like, yeah.
Anyone who tries to make fun of you has to go through me. It's like, what if the Hulk was riding a rhino?
Yeah.
It's like, well,
yeah.
Are they both laughing or just the rhino?
Yeah, they both are, but the rhino doesn't know why.
Yeah, it's close. Again, it needs just a bit more sand smoothing over.
What I'm hearing from all of these is the nuggets are there, the starts of Joe, or the idea, something is there. But there's too much of. I need 28 gags on my desk yesterday about it all that where they haven't been given the time needed to properly ferment and you know blossom. That's what happens. You ferment them.
Yep, just like white wine. White wine.
White wine.
All right, it is time to rank this thing. On the Simpsons Index, we rank using a 6-point scale, which starts down the bottom at failure. Maybe if the episode was just meh, you give it a participant. But for the positive rankings, you got okay bronze, good silver, excellent gold, but for the best of the very best, the episodes which the Simpsons could not exist without, you give cubic zirconia. I'm going to go first. Let me show you how it's done. Yeah, look, I'm giving this one a big old participant. I might have been talked up to bronze, but the thing is, like it's essentially what I was saying before. It's a fine enough experience until you start picking at it and going, okay, did this work? And it's like, no, really didn't. It didn't stand up structurally, but it wasn't an awful time by any stretch. BT.
I'm the same way. It's participant approaching bronze, like a few more gags or a little bit more story I would have got there. But in thinking about it, there's nothing about this I want to revisit. Like, if it's on, the best I can do is if it's on, I might kind of watch it while I'm doing something else. And really, that's not a glowing endorsement for a bronze. So it's got to be a participant.
And Paul, please finish it off.
Yeah, same, really. I don't know if I've ever ranked something more egregious than this as a participant. I don't think so, but this is why I routinely go into Goodreads and Letterboxd and change old reviews because, you know, new watermarks.
Yeah,
new benchmarks. Sorry.
New experiences change old perceptions.
Yeah, but this is thoroughly middle of the road. Didn't feel anything either way. It comes and goes. I'm not going to pick it. Yeah. The Simpsons HQ.
Yep.
Not going to talk about it ever again, I don't think, after this episode.
Yep.
Damning indictments. But, that equals a participant. Unanimous participant. And that is our last episode for season 23 as well, which is averaging out as a participant season.
Yay.
How fitting.
Well, I mean, it's actually weird. Like, season 23 only had two other unanimous participants, which was the Doshal Network, where Lisa starts a Facebook.
Oh, God.
And Ned and Edna's Blender Gender, which I'm so surprised I got through that sentence just then. Yeah, it's been a lot of highs and lows for that one to even out to that point. But yeah, that's season 23 in the books, guys.
Cool.
Oh, nice. And I believe that the first episode we got you to review, Paul, the Michael Cera one was on this season as well.
Oh, wow.
Where Lisa falls in love with a Ernest Hemingway type character, which is an original character played by Michael Cera, not Michael Cera wondering what everyone's wondering
what
he's
doing
in Springfield.
Yeah. How was that episode reviewed? Because I remember being angry.
Dull participant, I believe. I think me and BT were like, we've been here before. This is participant. You and Paul were like, what the fuck is this?
Mileage
may vary.
I haven't seen much new Simpsons, but I rewatched every single episode from the Golden Age in preparation for this. I hope I'm not disappointed.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
And please let the people know, where can they find more of you?
I do a couple of podcasts. You can, I don't know what that sentence was going to end up being. You can listen to them now with the tech they have nowadays.
Podcasts on computers now.
It's beyond my ken, but take it from me. I've been told by experts that you can listen to One Good Thing, which is a movie podcast where Paul Salt and I listen Nope. Words. I got caught up in the me and I grammar. My need to be perfect shines through, where me and the other guy watch bad movies and try and find good things in them.
Mm-hmm.
Try and succeed, because we've been doing it for about 7 years now.
Spectacular. Oof. Big fan.
I appreciate your constant input, BT, as a your online presence, because I'm only on the episode every couple of weeks now, and I feel like, you know, when you haven't seen someone in a year and whatever change they've gone through in that year looks way more dramatic. Every time I'm on the podcast, you're just a completely new entity. You've grown an extra dimension, and you're just existing to sort
this
of...
This is a lot of flowery language about trolling you with a Twitter name.
Yeah, it's done very, very well, and it inspires me. But the other podcast we're on is Quest Fantastic. I say we. I'm clearly... enjoy being on with other people. Mm-hmm. Quest Fantastic, which is an actual play podcast. First season was D&D, and the second season, which has just started, is Orbital Blues, which is sci-fi, sad cowboy adventure.
And I like my sci-fi cowboy adventures sad. Hell yeah.
It's the only way to do sad cowboy sci-fi adventures. Yeah, and that's Quest Fantastic. And you can hear them on all good podcatchers. And find us on Twitter and Facebook at OGT Pod and Quest Fantastic.
No, it's wonderful. Like, there's a lot of D&D podcasts or actual play podcasts out there, but like, the editing on that one is so good. Like, the immersion that you feel when you're listening to it is fantastic. It earns its name, Quest Fantastic.
And just the spin on it as well is great. The idea that they're basically a retired adventuring troupe who are back in for one last score is just a lot of fun.
It's trope heavy. We've satirized Milhouse in it for sure. But yeah, I really put a lot of work into making sure that everything feels cinematic and very, very well produced. Yes. And I score all the music and...
Yeah. Yep.
But of course, so with that show, you won't get the dud.
That's true. But when we do...
Links to all that in the descriptions. Mm. But BT, what if people want to hear more of us?
Well, they can go to patreon.com/sidequeststudios. That's patreon.com/sidequeststudios, if I said it correctly. where you can catch everything that we're doing, and including over 170, 80, what are we up to? Like, exclusive podcasts for like such small amount of money. You've probably dropped it before and been like, nah. So if you were like, yeah, and pick that money up, you could get in on a little Patreon and check out all the benefits. One massive benefit that we're a big fan of, now that we're talking movies, especially, you know, maybe ones of questionable quality, is our show starring Springfield, where if you can find a movie that has a cast of The Simpsons in it, you can recommend that movie to us and we will have to watch it and review it. Which has given us just the wildest mixed bag of films, and it's fantastic. It is my favorite Patreon show, easily.
Yeah, it's been a really fun time, and especially for me, who doesn't want to watch a lot of movies. It's just been such a weird grab bag, and you yourself, Paul Goodman, have suggested some wonderful things for us, like under your guide, we've reviewed The Birdcage and Click, such a stellar films as...
Was Click me, or was Click Salt?
I thought that was a coordinated attack.
Oh, so that could be coordinated,
Came back from both sides, clever girl.
You're like, okay, we're going to give you Spinal Tap, but you got to do, you got to have your click first before you eat your Spinal Tap.
Yeah, if you want to grow it big and strong.
Yeah.
You've since taken to asking us individually, because I tend to just now, I'm like, oh, you should watch Gross Point Blank. It's very good.
Yeah, that was a really interesting watch. Yeah. Who was in that again? Oh, Hank Azaria. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Azaria pops up in a lot of these.
Yeah, it's mostly been Azaria, Harry Shearer, and a lot of cameos by Dan Castellaneta.
Yeah, Dan Castellaneta playing a thug or a kidnapper or something. He's in the show for for 3 seconds.
It counts.
Yeah.
Superhero movie, I think he was like the one who was like, oh, you've gone mad with power, and then gets killed off by the main villain, played by Shooter McGavin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, God.
Surprisingly solid parody movie, I reckon. Yeah. I thought that one was going to be a failure for sure.
Shockingly way ahead of its time.
But yeah, that's over at our Patreon page, patreon.com/sidequeststudio. Bonus podcast every week, back catalog access, and all the Patreon perks that come with that. Yep. But for now, we got to get out of here. Thank you once again, Paul Goodman.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you once again, BT.
I should have found a quote from this episode to say on my exit. Pay for your genius.
Yeah.
And I've been Elliot J. O'Neill, and my catchphrase is, that's all the mustard in the house.
And now we're out of mustard. I was going to make a stencil with it.
I should introduce my catchphrase more. Here's the catchphrase.
Thank you for listening to the Simpsons Index podcast, which is also an online spreadsheet available at thesimpsonsindex.com. You can also check out our other shows, like Pulp Fury Radio, our scripted fiction podcast, which tells all original stories across a range of pulp genres, and Thrones of Game, where we review Game of Thrones in reverse order. Links to those podcasts and more will be available in the show notes. And now please stay tuned for the bonus scenes!
So does it record individual tracks on Riverside as well?
Yes, yes.
Ah, nice, okay. This is cool because I have a client that I'm editing for, and she has been looking for various solutions to various things, and I did suggest Riverside after looking into it, but this is my first time using it. So.
Oh, well, I got it recommended by, I think it was fucking Dando from Four Finger Pod. Okay. But yeah, it's really good. Does individual tracks and also does a transcript of the whole thing. Like,
oh, wow.
It's very AI, so like, yeah. But it is just sort of handy to being able to sort of search for a part in the pod and like get a timestamp is very handy.
Yeah, where do we say this?
Nice. Yeah. It
even though, again, it's AI and it really doesn't understand my accent.
Oh, yeah. I do love the number of times we've been around trying to like use your like Apple TV or whatever. And if you want to search something, you got to switch to American for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the problem. Unless you're an American and you speak, you know, and your style of speaking is enunciating every single vowel in every syllable. Yeah. It's not made for the faster talking, pinched speaking of us.
Yeah, and you've got to talk exactly like a fucking TikTok AI text-to-speech filter.
Yeah.
My face when my cat eats lasagna. I don't know.
Yeah, we watch the same videos.
I hate Mondays.